We're going to take a short break for one of our sponsors. I haven't tried this one, but it looks well worth checking out if weight loss has been an ongoing challenge for you. Robody pairs medication options with diet and exercise modifications to achieve your desired goal. Before being prescribed any medication, patients complete an online medical visit, lab test, and more to see if you're right for their program. You can sign up online, which means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Their data shows that average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/untangle. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 a month for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/untangle. Now, back to our show. We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts. Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Meditation Studio. I'm Patricia Karpis. In this series, we introduce you to real people with extraordinary stories and experts who share how meditation and mindfulness practices change our lives. Our podcast is brought to you by Meditation Studio, Apple's pick as one of the 10 best apps of the year. Why download the app? Because life is messy. We get stressed, anxious, have trouble sleeping. We work too hard, deal with conflict, our hearts get broken, we worry about the state of the world, we meditate because we're human. Our app gives you hundreds of meditations from over 30 leading experts. It helps a lot. And you can now enjoy 8 free meditations on Alexa. Just ask her to enable Meditation Studio. And don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. We love having you with us. Today's guest is Tina Staley. Tina is a social worker, author, and founder of the Kindness Action Network. Her program is designed to provide tools to inspire positive change with individuals, in corporations, healthcare organizations, with cancer patients, veterans, and many others. Her goal is to shift negative thinking, encourage work-life balance, and help people develop more effective communication skills. She's done quite a bit of research on kindness to oneself and others, and it turns out it truly does have the power to heal. Now, here's Tina. Tina, it's so great to have you on Untangle today. Thank you for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it is my pleasure. I love what you're doing with the Kindness Action Network. And I would love to share that with people. If you wouldn't mind giving us a little bit of background on what that is and what inspired you to start that.
Well, for the past 25 years, I'm a social worker and I have worked with clients and patients, everyone from somebody dealing with a cancer diagnosis to end of life, to individuals suffering from different life stressors, whether it be a divorce, a loss of a job, depression, anxiety. And the one thing that I noticed, whether it was a cancer patient who had just had chemotherapy and gone through a difficult treatment, and what was it that they said, when I get better, I want to give back to other cancer patients and families. Or one of the vets I worked with returning from the war. And once we dealt with the depression, he started volunteering, and that's what got him back in the game of life. Or a mother who was burnt out and dealing with stress and anxiety, that once she started to become kinder to herself, then started to become more loving and patient with her children. So what I noticed, that the difference between coping in my work and thriving was kindness to self, kindness to others, and kindness to the community. So I created a 12-step kindness in action program that teaches steps and mindfulness tools on how we can implement and be conscious of more kindness in our life.
I love that so much. I am wondering, when you were dealing with all of these different patients, I mean, and you're talking about some of the most really, really intense things we go through in life, cancer, death, veterans coming back with PTSD, was it their own discovery that giving kindness to themselves and others would make them feel better?
A lot of the mindfulness tools that I teach in workshops and with my individual clients is really about relieving stress, helping them become more resilient, more mindful. But the tools with kindness are a combination of the previous research and then what they can do that they might not have thought about. So being more present with others, learning to let go, having a difficult conversation from kindness, doing small things in their community. Because what you saw is that when they started to be more connected and engage with kindness, whether it was helping a neighbor with her firewood, or making their kids lunches, or actually acknowledging someone, then they started to feel more connected to society, more connected to themselves. And then they started to discover, I'm feeling like I have more purpose. I'm feeling like I have more meaning. I'm alive. Because I feel that oftentimes we're looking for that purpose. We're looking for that motivation. We truly want to be, hopefully, our greatest self. But no one really quite teaches us how to create that consciousness.
I'm also curious about what is it in us that makes us sort of lost without purpose, sort of as a general rule? And then how did you find your purpose? What was your overall inspiration on a personal level to do this work?
Well, I feel that what leads us not to have purpose is that we get very bogged down with stresses. And like a stressful situation, they go on top of each other like the snowball effect. And then all of a sudden, you know, it's like you feel burnout, you feel anxious, you feel stressed, you can't connect. Then we become maybe even more socially isolated because we're just exhausted or depressed or anxious, or we just don't know what that one thing is. So that's where I feel that this work really does help in terms of finding that greater purpose. And then when in my own work, I have to say that I really have noticed that when I practice the steps, when I slow down, I just have joy in my life, even kindness to myself. Doing the self-care practices, or when I'm present with a daily activity and don't want to do the laundry, but I spend 10 minutes and say, "For I can do anything for 10 minutes. That's showing kindness. It's getting out of the head of the negative thinking. And it's getting out of that sort of, I feel we oftentimes walk around with that low grade dread or something of what do we have to do next. And I just feel that when I started then to And I've naturally been pretty much this way, but say thank you, or every week I write at least 3 to 4 notes to people. It might be my mailman, and I leave it with his name on it on the door. I write my doctor I went to and said, thank you for spending the time with me. Or somebody that did something special and made an extra bouquet of flowers. Whatever it is, creating that consciousness, or just going into the elevator at a workplace and I'm in a hurry, and instead of pressing close when the person's coming, I press open and actually greet them and say hello. That's my mood, right?
It's so funny. I love what you're saying, because the idea of us, you know, we are so bogged down with our stresses. We're all on autopilot, moving really fast. And when we're doing things one after another really fast in our lives, we often forget to do the things that make us feel more filled with purpose, more connected, kinder. And what you're saying is there are probably some really simple things that we can do to kind of bring us back to that joy and kindness that really feeds us and nourishes us.
It's true. They now have a lot of research on kindness, that it makes us happier, healthier, live longer, have better relationships. Contagious is contagious. I mean, remember one morning in Canada, somebody paid for the person in the car behind them at a drive-through coffee place to have a cup of coffee, and it was repeated 229 times.
Oh no, I haven't heard about that. That's fantastic.
Yeah, so you see that it is contagious. If you let someone in traffic, NYU students did a research and they showed that the person you let in traffic is 9 times more likely to let the next person in.
Wow. So kindness has a reverberating effect, and we all become better people from a single act of kindness, basically.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is "Take comfort in Born shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
How do we become kinder to ourselves? Let's talk about the tools, the 12-step program that you have put together. I'd like to really go through some of the tools themselves so that people can kind of understand how broad the program is.
The first thing that we can do in terms of a daily practice is our morning thoughts. I really believe that the thoughts we wake up thinking and that we hold on to carry forward in the rest of our day. And if you become conscious of, okay, am I waking up anxious? Am I waking up with this negative thought or upset or worried? Then that's creating angst. So what can we do? And I often say the first act of kindness for yourself is maybe meditate, read a couple of minutes of something inspirational. Listen to music or that first cup of coffee in a peaceful place for 5-10 minutes. But allow yourself to tap into and train yourself a peaceful place within yourself so that you're able to deal with situations better, kinder.
I'm really glad you're starting with the morning thoughts. And if I wake up in a bad mood, we have some meditations on Meditation Studio that are designed just for that in our happiness collection. And there might be one called Overcoming Negative Thoughts or Breaking a Bad Mood. And they're just like 5 or 6 minutes of ideas for cultivating more positive energy. And I find that it just makes such a big difference. And the other thing I think makes a big difference, and I don't know if this is part of your protocol, but is some people just have a gratitude journal where they write down like 3 things that they're really grateful for. And that just makes you smile sometimes to do that.
Absolutely. Gratitude is a big piece of this. Also, I would recommend, which I'm sure you do, your meditations in the middle of the night when you wake up and you can't go back to sleep and you're in the bad neighborhood of what I call of your mind. One of your meditations and just feel the shift in your body.
You're right. Like we have a lot of different neighborhoods in our minds. So I love you offer all of these different tools. Do you think of that morning thoughts tool as the first step in the 12 steps?
I wouldn't say there's a first tool, but a very important tool of creating mindfulness is what I call my 5-question tool.
I love that. Yes.
How you flip a negative thought, how you flip a stressor. And I often say, just write down on a piece of paper your stressor, your thoughts, your emotions, your behavior, how it feels in your body, and what you need to feel better. And these questions, so for instance, I had a mother the other day whose son keeps a really dirty, filthy room. Well, she, under her thoughts, he wasn't going to amount for anything in life. He was lazy. She's having all these negative things or fears or anxiety and frustration about and even anger about this room. And her behavior was turned to yelling and slamming doors. And then all of a sudden, she stopped and she was conscious of her thoughts. And this is her son. And she said, wait a second. Like, my son plays in a band. He's a great musician. He makes great grades. People love him. And I am forming his whole future on the room. What do I need to do to feel better? Shut the door. Right?
Well, this is funny because this is sort of about judging, right? You see one thing about someone and you start judging their entire character by that one thing and you forget that there are many other stories in and around that person. So I like that. And also what you're saying is she's the one that needed to change. Maybe he could clean up his room, okay. But if she closed the door, she could move on with a more positive attitude towards him.
Right. And then see what happens to the room. You never know.
Exactly. So is the 5-question tool the one where you ask yourself what's stressing you out and then you go through that list you were talking about?
Yes. I just finished a lot of workshops for the sheriff's department, helping them be able to use this not to escalate in a difficult situation, to be conscious of, oh my gosh, how is this affecting me? What is my behavior? What do I feel in the back of the neck? What do I need to feel better? Pause, take a breath, be patient. All of those things, corporations, when I use this tool, they're all coming at it, usually from a daily life stressor of so much work and what can they do? And they don't have enough time for their family. So what they need to do to feel better is to make sure that everybody's home on Wednesday nights for a family dinner. And they create more family time when they feel they're working too much. So it's about being mindful.
It's creating a culture of kindness, a sheriff's department and in corporations. I want to ask you a specific question. This is something someone had an experience they shared with me yesterday where there's somebody that they work with that triggers them, takes them to their edge, and they lose it sometimes when they deal with this person. What is the action or the tool that you would suggest for when you know that person's not going to change, you don't want to be the one to change them, but they just annoy you to no end?
Press pause. Because when you have people come at us, you need to press pause to gather yourself, take a walk, go get a cup of coffee, really come back and then decide what you need to do to feel better. Do you need to let it go? Do you need to say to yourself, you're doing the best you can? Do you need to maybe approach them about the behavior with the intention to be kind? So I feel that in those situations, you need, first of all, to press the pause and not engage in the negativity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Take a breath. Do what you can. Because what you are saying right now is impacting our families. It's impacting our workplaces in terms of negative interactions, in terms of creating fear, in terms of not being considerate, saying things that are unnecessary, that are not kind, that just come to your mind without thought. It's costing, by the way, our corporations billions and billions of dollars each year in these fearful, stressful environments by that type of interaction.
And it's because if you don't press pause, you take on that negative energy, you become stressed, then you might yell at your children or drive like a maniac or whatever it is that is fueled by your negative energy, and you continue that cycle. So how do you let go? It's so easy to say let go, but it's so hard in actual practice. And that's why we're such a stressed out culture, because we can't let go of these things that bother us.
Well, I think there's three ways that I'll speak about. So all of a sudden, when you're in that angst, and then you start having these negative thoughts and these judgment, which is all normal when you've had like a negative interaction with somebody and they're this, and you've got to say, stop. Watch your thoughts. And if you can, figure out a way to flip them. Cognitively be able to say, I'm doing my best. I walked into a situation very calm and now I'm very tense, and maybe go do a mood shifter. Take a walk, call a friend to talk, be able to take a breath. So then you might have to switch your thoughts. If you can in that moment, you might have to shift your mood, do something to distract yourself.
I really love what you say about getting out of our thinking mind, because our mind tends to sort of get on to repeat, repeat, repeat. So you tell this one story in your head and then just you play it over and over again. So you really do need to distract or intercept right then and there.
I sometimes call it the white knuckle treatment. You know, you want to just lash out and you got to white knuckle it. Because, mm-hmm. you know, what you have to kind of think of, what is the outcome? Is it going to serve me, this interaction, or is it not?
So you're saying basically, if you have the wherewithal to stop in that moment, to pause and say, what is the best outcome here? And sometimes the best outcome could be, this is not a good time for us to be meeting right now. Sometimes you can just walk away from a situation because you know that if you go any further, it cannot be good. So what are some of the other tools that we should be thinking about?
I'd like to say that the 12 steps you can download from my website. In the 12 steps for my one kindness in action tool is engage in active kindness, be present with others, be present with daily activities, let go, practice taking care of yourself, acknowledge others, learn to pause, flip negative thoughts, have difficult conversations, be grateful, experience trust, and have fun. So we talked about one of the tools that we use for flipping the negative thoughts, the 5-question tool. Another tool that I teach is about how do you access your support system? Because I personally feel that social isolation is killing us. And I believe that the loneliness factor is deadly. And in my workshops, I really teach people a tool to give them a visual perspective of who is in their network, whether it's family and friends, whether it's a neighbor, whether it's organizations within their communities, because oftentimes, and I really learned this working with a patient who was coming home from surgery and didn't know who to call to pick her up from the hospital. And then once she looked at it and she said, wow, I really do have more people than I thought that I could ask. And yet I was feeling so alone and isolated. So it might not be a lot for some people. They are living alone and they might need to have somebody from the community or a volunteer, but most likely we can access someone in our support system to feel connected. So I really work a lot on connectivity. But I would also like to say one thing, because I do a lot of work, especially in medical centers, my workshops on burnout using tools. And I was working with a very successful oncologist. We all know the pressure oncologists are under, but she was really suffering from burnout. And I said, I tell you what, when you walk into the room, why don't you put down your electronics and just for 1 minute ask your patient, how are you? And she started just, how are you? And really listening and connecting. And what she found was in the world of managed care that she was actually out in a shorter amount of time. She felt more connected. She laughed more. And the stress and the burnout started to dissipate.
This is so interesting. That's really what Sharon Salzberg talks about in her book, Real Love, which is these real connections that we make every day with people we know and people we barely know. But when we stop and listen to them, we have these really profound connections.
And I think maybe it was you I was speaking with at one point, but a checkout counter is the best place to practice. Really be present. It doesn't take more than 5 seconds of your day to slow down and acknowledge the checkout clerk. Find something nice. I sat and observed in Whole Foods for about 3 weeks interactions, and I would see moods shift.
Yeah. Not surprising at all, right?
Right. It's the connection.
It's the connection. And I think just giving somebody real joy during the day at a checkout counter or a post office anywhere is a real gift that you can give someone.
Yes, and yourself.
So I want to shift gears for a second because you also have tools for end of life. And I'm very interested and curious about that, especially because you wrote a book called Living Fully, Dying Well, which is just such a beautiful book. And then you did a TED Talk as well on end of life. So will you talk a little bit about these tools and about your work with end of life?
Yes. Well, working with end of life was really my mission, my first, say, 15 to 18 years of my career. Maybe 25 years ago, death was like the elephant in the room. No one wanted to talk about it. No one knew how to deal with it. Nobody was taught how to deal with it. And what I noticed is that some of our greatest fears in life are around end of life. So when I started to work with clients and patients, letting them address what their greatest fear was, whether it be the fear of towards end of life of being a burden, or that somebody wouldn't be there for them, that they would be alone, or that they would be in pain. Once they started to understand what it was and what they needed to feel better, they oftentimes realized that a lot was the snowball effect getting created in their mind.
And how do you, as a social worker and as a partner with some of your clients or patients who are dealing with end-of-life issues, either as caregivers or actually dying, how do you help them dissipate some of the fear that is around that?
Well, we oftentimes really speak about some of the more common fears around end of life. And sometimes it might not even be end of life. It's like about the kids being okay or finances or something like that. So that's where I help people identify that one thing and really even look to see if it's true or not true and break it down. And Ira Byock, a very famous palliative care physician, says, at the end of life, people are concerned about three things. Was I loved? Did I love back? And where did I make a contribution?
Oh, I love those three questions.
Yes. So if you get people and take them from this place of fear to hope to possibility, even love, then you can start to reflect on where your life did have purpose, where it did have meaning, where did you make a contribution?
We can't control other people, but we can control ourselves. And these are really concrete tools and steps to be able to inject more love and kindness in our lives. I really thank you so much for the work that you're doing, Tina.
I'm just so incredibly grateful for the opportunity to be sharing this work. So thank you.
Thanks so much to Tina for being on our show today. For more information on her amazing programs, check out tinastaley.com. If you enjoyed this podcast, can you take a minute to rate and review it? And if you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at patricia@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to download Meditation Studio in the App Store or on Google Play. We'll see you next time.